Hey, welcome in. Welcome to the show. It's time, everyone. It's time for the podcast. It's beginning now. And welcome in. It's the first podcast of 2021. We made it. We made it through 2020, and the world is still very much so in the same place that it was a few short days ago. But we made it through 2020. And we have a little more hope that maybe this year we'll start to see the beginnings of the end of the current state that we're in. We'll start to see the beginnings of what the new normal is going to be, a return to going places and doing things. We might see the beginnings of that this year. So that's a cause for hope. I'm recording this on Tuesday, the 5th, and it's looking right now like the Georgia runoff election is going to tilt blue. I am not calling that right now on the podcast because it's not official yet, and I could absolutely be wrong about that, but it's looking good. I'm staying optimistic. All the projections are good. It would make sense to me. It seems like Trump has done so much damage even since the election to his base that, like, he probably did discourage people from turning out for that runoff election and motivated Democratic voters to turn out for it. Even if just the motivation for people to show up was just, hey, I want $2,000 in stimulus money. You know, that's a good reason to get out and vote. But yeah, that has not been officially called yet, so I'm not going to make a call on that. But I'm looking at it, and where I'm sitting right now, it looks good. So if I'm wrong about this when you're listening to this, dear listener, I'm very sorry about that. I'm sorry for how foolish I sound right now. And if I'm right, yay! I guess that means that's one more thing that we can say is maybe a good thing. If you're listening to this episode and you didn't listen to last week's episode, this is obviously part two of the discussion I had last week with my brother about 2020. Again, we are not getting to all of the year's topics. Last week we talked about, you know, kind of the Pentagon releasing briefings on UFOs and aliens and all that weird stuff. We talked about Kobe Bryant. We talked about the beginnings of kind of the shutdown and when COVID started spreading. And we talked a little bit about risk assessment and things like that. We are going to continue COVID discussion on this week's episode and get into, you know, the Black Lives Matter protests and the election and all of that fun stuff. And I'm not doing a written intro because it's just, you know, there's a lot of different things that my brother and I are talking about on this episode. It's part two, so if you haven't listened to part one, go check that out. And then here's part two from a Blanketfoot recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood. This is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking again with my big brother, Adam Archer, about the year that was 2020. Yeah, so, okay, that's a separate topic for another day, too. Economics and all that. But another thing that happens this year after it becomes clear that COVID-19 is going to be the dominating thing that we are dealing with and the unfortunate politicization of it and the fact that we just can't seem to get unified on what our approach to it is. And look, there's all sorts of stuff to be said about, like, the efficacy of different methods and things like that. You know, I mean, it is very difficult to address people with certain paranoias or fears. You know, it's so hard to, I like to go see a few friends at a time, mm-hmm. you know, a couple times or once a week, you know, and it's just, there's so much that's been lost. You know, I can't go to the movies, can't go to, you know, restaurants, and it sounds so like first world problems, but it's like, I like to go to the park and throw a frisbee with my pal and chat with him, you know, if that's all I can do this year. And it's a hard thing to justify sometimes because people are like, if you don't have to, you shouldn't, you know.
Well, but that's another thing, again, that's been politicized. So yeah. For to use the example of like having social gatherings,
mm-hmm.
there is an inherent amount of risk that everyone assumes being alive every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Being alive, it involves risk. You get in a car, you could die in that car. You breathe air, you might get cancer from the pollution. You go out in the sun, you might get skin cancer. You eat something at a restaurant, you might get a foodborne illness from that restaurant. There's all kinds of risk that's just constantly bombarding us. But we're pretty skilled species at sidestepping risk and managing and measuring risk and figuring out tools to help us to avoid these things that could be catastrophic. And so that is just an inherent part of life. You're never going to get life without some level of risk. Obviously, collectively, the risk has heightened for everyone. There is this thing that's an invisible creature that is infecting millions of people at a time, and you don't know who has it. That raises the stakes, for mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah.
But we still have to go on living. You cannot put life on. I just disagree with people who say, you know, don't go and do that. Don't go and see your parents. Don't go and see your grandparents.
We'll get back to it soon enough, you know.
Maybe.
No,
maybe.
No, I'm saying the people who say that, yeah.
Because the answer is maybe. Like, maybe my grandma is going to die this year. And I spent the last year of her life not seeing her because I wasn't managing the risk properly. I wasn't assessing the risk. Yes, she might die from COVID-19, but she's going to die. She's mm-hmm. going to die from something. And do we want her to spend the last year of her life in isolation? Like, I've got somebody who works with me who confided in me and told me that he went to a Thanksgiving dinner with 70 people. And I was just totally taken back because there were 7 people at ours. It was mm-hmm. yeah. it was my immediate family and mom and dad. But I didn't immediately castigate him and shame him. How dare you go to this event with 70 people? Instead, I just said, wow, I haven't heard anybody doing that. What was the reason for it? And he just goes, my mom and dad are 85 years old, and they honestly said, if I have to choose between dying and not seeing my family at this age, I would rather die, basically. If I had to choose not seeing my family. And who am I to stand in judgment of somebody's decision or someone's assessment of that risk? Yes, it could affect other people. I get that. But this person's 85 years old.
And these conversations are so difficult to have this year because the people who are saying, you know, that's irresponsible and really like
it is to a degree, sure.
Yeah. It's like when I'm having these conversations with people, it's like I want to make it clear that I'm like, I don't disagree with you mm-hmm. and I don't think that you're wrong and I don't but
to a degree you are wrong. Like both sides are wrong to a degree. Like
yeah.
if you spent a year if your parent
because I just don't want to sound like a denier. No, I don't want to sound like a person who's like it's a hoax, it's not real.
I'm talking about assessing risk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like if mom or dad got sick right now.
Uh-huh.
And they were still at home, me personally, I would still come in contact with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because if this is it, if this is the end, and they only have 10 more days on this planet, I would assess the risk and I would do everything in my power to protect myself and to protect my family. But I'm not going to stay isolated in my home and say, hasta la vista, mom and dad, good luck.
Yeah.
Just not going to do that. Somebody else might disagree with me. That might be too much for their risk tolerance. They might say, I've got a 3-year-old at home and a 4-year-old and I have a child with respiratory issues and I can't take on that risk. Who am I to stand in judgment of that? But I can't stand in judgment of other people for making risk management judgments about their own life, knowing that, and that's where the centralized leadership has just failed, because there has to be consistent things that everyone can do universally at a base level that aren't politicized, that don't require us then dictating the minutiae of everyone's lives. Mm. It could be simple things: wash your hands, avoid contact with others up to six to 10 feet, whatever it is, social distance.
Wear a mask.
And wear a mask. Those three things. Whatever else you avoid groups of people over 25 people.
Yeah.
Definitely that are from outside your immediate family.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then if people decide to sidestep that and to not follow those dictates, they're taking on more risk. And they're going to threaten other people, potentially. Yes. But we can't get into a situation. That's where I get the rights argument. I'm extremely leery of 1984. I've read that book 10 times. It's one of my favorite books.
Yeah.
It's a slippery slope. We can become that society that quick. Overnight, it's just little by little by little before all of a sudden, oh, you're not allowed to say that word anymore because it's not allowed.
Well, I think, though, the reason why that debate became difficult in the country, though, is that there was this big contingent of people who were screaming about my freedoms and my rights, and
sure,
as though they were being locked down, yeah, under lock and key by martial law, and that the government was coming to take. And it's like
poor risk assessment.
And it's like,
that would
all
be
we
my
were
argument.
Asking you to do, yeah, is just be considerate.
Yes,
and it became
they're not managing
this,
the risk properly. Yeah. You're taking away my freedom. No, I'm just asking you to be more cautious with the risk that everyone is exposed to. That's it.
Just asking you to do a few simple things, mm-hmm, a few simple things. And since you can't do it, we keep getting bigger and bigger spikes of these things. And since you, in fact, not just because you're not doing it, but because you're actually throwing giant, you know, gatherings,
yeah,
rallies.
15,000 people down in Utah County,
right,
a party at Halloween.
And we're having spikes directly related to these events. It's like, that's what I'm saying is because I don't disagree with you that people, that the minutiae of people's lives, people should be able to still be allowed to self-dictate and get together with their families and say, hey, we're going to get together for this holiday. We're all going to like get tested before we get together. Anyone who's sick, you know, maybe try to stay home, you know, but we're going to work this out in our own way and do our own risk, mm-hmm, assessment. But it's tough to have this conversation and not sound like you're one of the people who doesn't get it or who's being irresponsible. Mm-hmm. But it's like, really, if we all could have just from the get-go agreed to those simple things, social distancing, wearing masks, washing your hands, mm-hmm, don't get into groups of larger than 15 people, you know, if we all could have just done those simple things and not had it become this thing of like, it's government overreach. It's like, it's because of that panic, the 1984 panic, mm-hmm, that it's like, that's not what's going on right now. There's an actual situation that's happening that's just asking for us all to participate in this.
That's the politicization of the problem, you know, that this,
but to me, I'm like, it doesn't have to be politicized,
but it doesn't have to be. But since it is, that's why it got so murky. If this was just about humanity, who cares about the right? Who cares about the left? What's the safest thing for us to do as people? Well, if the scientists who are, you know, I don't work for the White House. I work for Columbia University, or I work for Harvard School of Medicine.
Yeah.
This is the three or four things that our department would recommend that if everyone universally could do their very best to do, it should get us through this thing in a relatively safe way. That doesn't have to be political, but it did. It got politicized and it is politicized now. And
yeah,
so it's a freaking mess.
Yeah. I go back to, again, I'm like, I don't think that, you know, so I'll share opinions about this on TikTok or on, mm-hmm, social media, and people will be like, why do you have to be political? And I'm like, to me, the opinion that I'm sharing isn't a political opinion. It's a human opinion, mm-hmm, about just like what is a humane, compassionate stance to have. It happens to be aligned with a certain political ideology, but that's just coincidental. Like, that's just the, like, you know, like that party panders to people who think like I think, mm-hmm, but like it's just how I feel about police brutality and racial injustice. I'm like, it's not a political thing to me. It really, like, it just is clear that that's a problem, mm-hmm, that you can't have unchecked power in a police system. If anything, they should be held to a higher standard to be able to have that job, and a higher standard of like upkeeping, you know, upholding the law. They shouldn't be just able to break the law, at will. In fact, our biggest, most heavy laws, they shouldn't be able to just murder people on camera with absolute proof that it was murder and just get away with it because their job is hard and they're underpaid. You know, that doesn't make any sense. And that's not I'm like, this isn't a political fight, but it becomes political, it becomes this thing where if you're on the left, you better be
on our side. Yeah. You better have a Black Lives Matter poster out.
And if you're on the right, you better have a thin blue line hat on. Yep. And you better, which is funny that they're so about like not desecrating the flag, but then they have all these like these like different versions of flags that they, create.
The Jordan Klepper video where Trump's all across the American flag and the guy's, will you please stop stepping on the flag? It's desecrating the flag. And Klepper points up and he's like, no, this picture of Donald Trump is desecrating this flag.
Yeah.
Like, what is this doing on here?
Yeah. So that's another thing that I don't think we can talk about 2020 without talking about is, in like April, May, really early on into this thing, we have another national reckoning with, it turns into kind of an international reckoning with racism and race in the United States. And it's kind of like terrible timing for it, but it's like, well, we can't just put that's a thing we can't just put off. We can't just go, sorry guys, can we talk about this in a year? It's like, well,
this is pressing right now.
And it was like it was actually alarming. You talked about the fact that this year we haven't seen many mass shootings, which I do agree is very interesting, but it was
even in that situation with all of the writing, there was no mass shootings.
Yeah, there was some violence. There were some isolated incidents. You know, Kyle Rittenhouse shooting three people, and there was definitely some violence. But it was kind of crazy the amount of videos that came out in a very short amount of time. That it started. It wasn't even George Floyd that started it. It started with that. I can't remember his name now. It was the kid that
Armand Arbery,
who was out in a neighborhood he wasn't supposed to be in,
not doing anything,
and he got cornered by two cars. You know, these guys. I mean, can you imagine the terror that this kid felt as behind him a truck with dudes with shotguns pulls up behind him, and then he tries to run one direction, and another car pulls up and traps him, like
terrifying.
And so in the video they're like, well, he was trying to wrestle with us. It's like, well, of course he was. At that point, it's a fight for his life. You were pulling up with intent to kill him.
Yeah,
and you did. And so that was the first one, and it somehow didn't get. It wasn't until his their attorneys released this footage publicly, because they thought somehow that the footage would exonerate the killers, that went public. And shortly thereafter, we get Breonna Taylor and George Floyd like in succession. And then shortly thereafter that we get Elijah McClain, and we get it's just like boom, 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 boom. And it's something that we just can't ignore, even though coronavirus is raging across the world.
Yeah.
And, it becomes almost for a time a bigger story than the pandemic.
Well, I think this is very similar to the pandemic story because of how it has been politicized. And I think it's very difficult not to politicize this one just because of how pressing and how personal it feels to so many people, and rightfully so. My favorite podcaster beside you, Sam Harris, his episode on this, I think was pretty enlightening, because I respect Sam so much, because yes, he will admit that he leans more liberal, but he's just a very level-headed thinker that just wants to be able to discuss ideas, flesh them out, and let reason prevail. And to say that police are only killing black men, that's just not true. They're killing all kinds of people. They're killing white people. They're killing Hispanics. They're killing people. They're killing people that they shouldn't be killing. That's just happening universally.
Yeah.
But to say that, and then to say all lives matter, is to minimize the feeling, the pain that people feel. And so for me, the most helpful thing that I read during this entire experience, because this was so pervasive, that for the first time in my white life, I couldn't look away from it. And I, when I can't look away from something, I want to know everything about that subject. I want to just read and read and read and read, not watch videos. I don't want to go on and look at blogs. I want to read books on the subjects. I want to go to people who are doctors who are writing on these subjects. And the most inspiring book that I read that resonated with me and still stays with me to this day was Ta-Nehisi Coates' Between the World and Me. And it was recommended to me by a friend who is a professor of – he's a doctor of sociology down at BYU. He's African-American and or black. And he happens to be a black professor at BYU. Super fascinating. And he was so gracious and helpful during this time, kind of taking our group of friends that we grew up with and shepherding us and answering any of the questions that we had. We did a few Zoom calls where he kind of just led the discussion and would present information. And then throughout the week, he would just send us these studies and just this research that people so diligently put together. It was really fascinating and very enlightening. But the book Between the World and Me that we read as a group, the thing that was so powerful about that book is it's just a man describing what it feels like to be black in America, what it feels like. He's not talking about policy. He's not talking about specific things that people are doing and what they need to do to change that behavior that would make the problem go away. No, he's just talking about growing up as a black man in this country. This is what it feels like. And I felt it for the first time. Now, do I pretend to have the answers, how to fix this problem and how to have a world that's totally homogenized where no one has prejudices towards another person? No, I don't. And I don't think anyone has the answers to this entirely. But the best start is to empathize and to try to understand how someone feels.
Yeah, absolutely. And so this year, more than any other in my life, has made me a more political person. The Donald Trump administration has made me a more political person because it's just kind of like
you went from a 5 to a 10.
Yeah, because it's just like I have no choice but to be utterly opposed to you.
Yeah,
and if that means that I'm political now, I guess I'm political mm-hmm. because it's this year and movement and it's instances like this that make me political. Again, I don't view my stance on these things as me like taking up with a particular political ideology. It's more me being staunchly opposed to a political ideology that I think is so grossly wrong about these things all the time. And the mischaracterization of these movements, so you even just said, you're like, you know, it's disingenuous to say that it's just black men and women who are getting killed by police. No one's ever said that. No one's ever said that it's just them. We have numbers and statistics that show that it is disproportionately these communities that are targeted by police. And that's when people go, well, the crime, you know, the crime numbers in these communities.
No, my point was to say, even if you can show data that doesn't show that it's disproportionate, because we know we live in a post-truth era where people are hearing and seeing different information.
Sure.
So I'm just saying, granting that, it still is irrelevant to how someone feels.
Right.
If you're not willing to just go, I'm going to at least grant you, I'm going to, from the get-go, I'm going to believe you, mm-hmm. I'm going to believe your position, and then I'm going to try to listen to how you feel.
No, I understand that. I understand that. I'm saying, but the arguments that are formed when people say, from the right say, it's not just black people who are attacked. It's mm-hmm. like, well, okay, then you should, and if you are going to be all lives matter, if that's going to be your slogan, it's such a disingenuous movement because you're saying Black Lives Matter is a slogan to say our lives are being taken by the police force and we want them to be held accountable for this. Mm-hmm. You're saying as a response, all lives matter. So you're saying you care about all the lives that police are taking, but then you're also the same movement that says back the blue and the thin blue line and like we back cops and we're in the corner of cops. So it's like, well, hold on. So do you care about the people that the police are murdering or do you care about the police? Like, it seems like you're taking sides against the victims of police officers. And
I try to give people who are in these camps. I have friends that I went to high school with who have married police officers or friends who have been police officers. I do.
Yeah.
And they're going to have very strong opinions on this subject because it's very personal to them. And so I try to, just like the person, just like the Ta-Nehisi Coates, to just say, I'm just here to listen to you and try to understand how you feel. We have to do the same thing with somebody who's making the argument towards the police and at least give them the benefit of doubt that they might just be really, really scared and they can't say that. They can't even verbalize, I'm frightened as hell that if the police were decommissioned or if they were defunded, I'm doing that in air quotes, if this were what was to happen, I don't know if I could safely live in the world that follows that event. I all of my security just went out the window. And I think I'd like to give the most people, just like I was saying earlier with Dad, the reason that the world works is the majority of people are good and they're trying to do their best. So I want to give most people the benefit of doubt that they are not taking this stance because they are just really that insensitive to other people, but their fear is getting in the way of them dropping their guard and just saying, yes, this is scary. And I'm very scared that the world might be different after this. And it might be, and that makes me feel uncomfortable, but that doesn't excuse me from having to try to understand your experience.
But also I just don't understand using the fact that you're afraid of what it looks like if we start trying to reorganize or restructure or just ask for increased accountability for police misconduct, like any kind of measure, using your fear to just say it's okay that they're killing people and getting away with it. It's okay. And it's like,
I don't feel like, are they saying that? Are they saying it's okay, or are they just kind of brushing it under the rug
with
a red herring? Are they taking another subject and trying to put that on the platform and dismiss the first one?
But that's why I say it's disingenuous. It's disingenuous because first you say all lives matter because you're saying, oh, it's not just you guys. You guys aren't the only ones that are dealing with this. All lives matter. And it's like, okay, cool. Well, all right, everybody that's been killed by cops, we want justice for all these people.
Yeah.
Well, no, but we got to back our police officers. Being a police officer is a really scary job. It's like, okay, so which is it though? It's all it is. But all it really sounds
can
like.
Can it be both though, Austin?
No, but no. Well, all it really sounds
why,
like
why
is.
Why can't it be both? You can't say, we do need police in our country,
well,
and we also need to try to stop killing people who are innocent and who don't. We really can try to stop killing.
But all lives matter. People don't ask for accountability from police officers. They don't say we need to stop trying to kill innocent people.
But okay,
they don't say.
But
that.
I'm saying, couldn't you though?
You could, but they don't.
That's what I'm saying. You need to ask for both.
One could, but they don't. That's why I'm saying it's disingenuous. If they were sincere about the all lives matter message, you would think that they would be concerned about making sure police officers are held accountable for murder.
And that we still have police to police our country.
And then the back of the blue would be, but we also still want to have police officers.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not how they behave.
Mm-hmm.
Like the proof is in the pudding. Like the movement essentially just exists as an anti-Black Lives Matter movement.
Yeah.
Which makes it seem and feel and
racist.
Look very, very racist.
Yeah.
That it's like essentially you've created an entire movement that is just like an anger movement at the idea that there's people protesting for the idea that Black lives should be as important as white lives in America. And that idea has got you so mad that you've created an entire movement that exists just to be in opposition to that movement and to discredit that movement and to call them thugs and to say that they can't hold a protest without being violent and they're a bunch of rioters and looters. Like, your whole movement exists just to invalidate the message of this movement, which is just asking for, you know, accountability. That it's just like, hey, we're getting murdered here and we want someone to answer for it.
I think our country, our world is so sorely lacking a leader like a Fred Rogers that would be so useful right now.
Yeah.
Just somebody who is a kind, compassionate, calm voice of reason, who is welcoming to all, who opens up his doors, who listens, who is interested in people's stories.
Yeah.
We could so desperately use that type of leadership politically, spiritually. Is that too much to ask of your political leaders? Maybe that's not the role that they're supposed to serve. But I think the reason I bring that up is I think that we are primed for the rise of characters to take that place of the Fred Rogers. You know, yeah. He set the table and showed how it was possible to universally get a message across to children who would then become adults someday. And hopefully that message stays with them in their hearts and helps to shape the people that they will become. And maybe I'm just not active enough on social media, but I don't see who those voices are in today's world that's helping to shape the hearts and the minds of humanity.
Yeah. I mean, look, I agree with you, and I even agree that listening to people on both sides of an argument to try to understand people. And usually what I hear when I listen to people on the other side of this particular issue is something like what you were saying. That's like, I have friends or family that are police officers, mm-hmm. and they're afraid every day when they go to work, you know, like these are the stories that I hear. And I'm like, but no, I understand that. And I hear you on that. All we're asking for those people, if you've got a friend or a family member that's a good police officer, they should agree with this movement. They should want people who are, and
I think some of them do, though. I mean, you've seen examples of there was that police officer that was down in, I can't remember
Michigan,
where it was, but he was wearing the black sweatshirt and had the yellow lettering across it. And he was walking the streets with the protesters saying, yeah. You're right, we do need to do better.
Right.
And he wasn't accepting responsibility, saying we need to be defunded. He wasn't saying,
it's that, my fault.
Yeah, let's just get rid of the police, or it's all my fault. Just saying, I understand how you feel. And we do
when
need
I
to
saw
do
those videos of police officers joining protesters and walking with them and saying, I agree with you, we agree with this message. You know, the protests that I went to personally, mm-hmm. were protests that were it was actually really cool to see the police give us a wide berth. They would give us like three blocks of space so that we had our own space to do our thing. They weren't like standing over us, like waiting for us to make a mistake so they could jump in. And you know, it was like, it felt very like, very much so like we were working together with a common cause.
Yeah.
And I just, to me, it's not political. To me, it's like every time I talk to people and try to understand them in an empathetic way, I just can't get around like, why do you not agree with me on this? Why are you, it sounds like you're a good person. Why do you not agree
politics,
that if we've got a video
agenda
of someone being murdered, that person should be held accountable? That there should be some kind of repercussion
for
that.
It's really sad.
And you come back to like, well, but just I know someone who's a cop. I'm like, that's irrelevant.
Both sides are guilty of this, though. I mean, the left is guilty of shaming people who aren't enough, that who are not on the bandwagon enough for Black Lives Matter.
Sure, there's always.
It doesn't help from either side. Where we berate one another for not doing it the right way, for not being woke enough,
absolutely.
For not being
the whole,
pure enough, for not being religious enough or political enough. That doesn't ever help.
Yeah. There's a lot of infighting on the left of you know, there's a lot of no true Scotsmen, you know, mm-hmm. like you're not a real supporter, you're not a real ally, you're not, you know, there's definitely that, and that's a problem, especially when it's like, hey, look, we gotta, you know, same team here. We gotta be on the same team, especially if
the
we're,
only
you know,
way anything's going to positively happen is if we are on the same team.
Yeah.
This is never subjects and issues that are this big, that are affecting this many people, mm-hmm. they're not just gonna go away. You can't just sweep them under the rug. The only way they'll be resolved is if humanity grows up and matures collectively.
Yeah, this year, because it's been so divided, has just brought out this, like, I guess I'm political, but it's mostly because I just, try as I may, I can't understand how a person, even when they're explaining to me, like, no, this is why I think this way. I think this way because I feel like Black Lives Matter is an exclusion. It's an exclusionary slogan, and I want all lives matter to be included in that. I'm like, okay, cool, but like that movement isn't asking for any kind of police accountability for deaths. Like, so you, what is your movement? Like, that movement isn't doing what you say you want it to do. Mm-hmm. It seems disingenuous. It seems like you just don't like the Black Lives Matter movement.
I would just encourage you to keep having these conversations with people, though, because the second that you shut that down. And you just say their argument is nonsensical. There's no longer any capacity for you to pull someone across the aisle, and you're really good at that. You're really good at connecting with people, and I mean, shoot, the softest transition that I had out of religion was you, and you were my younger brother who didn't go on a mission. Like, why the hell am I listening to you about anything about religion?
I
mean,
I wasn't soft
religion?
With it. I was pretty heavy-handed with
it. But you were a soft transition for me because you were willing to listen to me and to listen to my perspective, and then you just shared with me some counterpoints to my perspective. And you never came right out and said, Adam, you're just fucking wrong. No, you didn't.
We stayed out on their front lawn till like 2 a.m. and yelled at each other. Do you not remember that?
I do remember it, but yeah. You didn't. But you never said it. You argued your point, and I went home. I went home and I thought about what you said, and I realized within 48 hours, his argument's more sound than mine. Mine's not based in reason. Mine's a very emotionally charged argument.
Yeah.
And that was really humbling to recognize that.
Yeah.
But I would not have had that perspective shift if you had told me outright, Adam, you're just fucking wrong.
Yeah.
You're just on the wrong side. You're an idiot. You're just dead wrong about all this stuff. I would have gone, oh, well, Austin doesn't care about me at all. Why would I listen to anything that he has to say?
And that's been the challenge. The challenge of this year for me has been having really difficult conversations with people that I disagree with and trying to keep it productive. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got a friend that's like a big Trump supporter, and like we go back and forth a lot on Facebook. And some days I can't do it. Some days I don't have the energy and the stamina for it. And I even go back and forth with Anthony, our brother, about Black Lives Matter and about protests and stuff, because I feel like he's so against the protests and the looting, and like he hates that. And I'm like, but if you don't like that, you need to look at the root cause, because it's worse. It's a response to a problem. Like it doesn't exist if there isn't this problem of unchecked police brutality. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
or mass incarceration.
Or mass incarceration. Just the whole history of racism in America. Yeah. It's a response to that problem, to that systemic problem. But that has been the challenge of this year, is trying to still stay with people and love people enough to keep the conversation going. And it's been very difficult.
Remember, on average, people live in our world today, and the number just keeps going up. People live on average 75 to 76 years. And the number, it will just keep going up in our lifetime. This is a race, or this is not a sprint. This is a marathon, and this is not going to be resolved overnight. And if we just throw up our hands and say everybody who disagrees with me is wrong and fuck them, and I'm only going to talk to people who agree with me, nothing's ever going to change.
And that's one of my least favorite things.
Is going to be a different place in 20 years, and hopefully, with productive conversations and civility and kindness and some really solid leadership from some people who rise up, who are inspired and really strong leaders, hopefully that world is a more positive place in 20 years than it was in 2020.
Yeah. So, okay, leaders, last thing before we're done. I mean, obviously I said this at the beginning of the conversation, but like there's just no way that we can get through all the things that were part of this year. And this last thing is a big one, and we'll try to get through it as quickly as possible just to wrap it up. But like, then we finish this just insane year with just an insane election, with just a crazy, whether you voted in it or not, like you cannot deny that it's just baffling. And it's also, what's really crazy about it is how predictable it all was.
Yeah.
That anyone who observed this guy at all could, and there's so many video clips of people being like, he's not gonna go if he loses. Like he's not gonna accept it.
Bill Maher's been saying this for 3 years.
Bill Maher's been saying it. So many people have been saying it. So many analysts, just analysts that are like people that go on the news and just political analysts that are like, my prediction is that if he loses, he won't accept the results, and that he'll basically. He'll go kicking and screaming. Not only did they predict it, he said it. Yeah. Like, he just said it. He said it in 2016. They said, what do you do if you lose to Hillary Clinton? He said, well, if I lose, then it's rigged. Just said it. And then all this year, well, everyone get ready, because they're doing this mail-in voting thing, and I think that if I lose, it's going to be because it was rigged. You know, just says it all year long, and then it happens. It's so weird. It's so bizarre to have a person say to everyone, if I lose this game that I'm about to play, I'm going to say that it was unfair. If I win, it was fair. But if I lose, it was unfair. Mm-hmm. To say that, and then when it happens, they do it, and everyone's like, you know what? He's right. This is fishy. It's like, how are you kidding me? And this is, again, when I'm trying to understand people on this other side. I can't understand how you could possibly be taken in by this absolute load of shit. Like, just, are you serious? Do you not have half a brain in your head? But that's why I made the episode I made last week about mm-hmm. cults, because it's like, you seem like a person who is indoctrinated.
Yeah.
Who is, you are beyond the point of being able to question rationally the actions and the words of this man.
Mm-hmm.
You will go along with whatever he says, even if it's so clearly not true.
I think there's people, I don't think all 75 million or however many million voted for Donald Trump. I don't think all of them buy his contestation hook, line, and sinker. I think there's probably less than 50% of those people that voted for him that are vehemently buying into the conspiracy theories and
you
everything.
Think so?
I don't think
every person I know that voted for him thinks that the election was rigged. Every
really?
Single person. I haven't heard a single person that I know that voted for him say, you know what, I think that
that's shocking
just lost.
To me. Because I don't think that the numbers bear out that way with any subject. That 99% of the people that voted for him are all are conspiracy theorists. Or
it
all,
might not be 99%, but I'm telling you, every person that I know, even, and I think I know like pretty reasonable people. Like pretty like people who seem to, when we have conversations about him, they seem to be like coming from a place that's like, hey, look, I'm not a huge fan of the guy. I just like believe that he's the better choice. Like people who seem pretty level-headed.
Okay, but I'm talking about actually believing that the election was stolen and rigged and that the Democrats somehow stole the election. I don't think that more than 50% of his voters literally believe that. I think there's a big portion of his voters who don't think that Donald Trump's a good person, who think that he's a terrible person. You would never model your life after him. You would never model your fathering or your husbandry after him.
Yeah.
But he could still be an effective leader for X, Y, and Z reason.
Yeah.
I think that there to minimize that and to say that there's people who lack the intelligence to have that position is, I think, too dismissive.
Oh, like, no, I'm not saying they're not, but I think your number of less than half, I'm like, no, it's probably like
75-80%.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. Just based on what I've observed in my personal circle.
If that's like, true, that's frightening.
I don't know anyone who that. I mean, I know that
because that would
I know
mean
that our uncle who voted for him. Thinks
that would
that
mean
it was
that 50 million that. People are in a cult, though, or in an ideological cult where they're willing to believe this man who has shown himself time and time and time again to be a criminal
con man,
to be a con man, to be a what's the word I'm looking for?
Charlatan, a liar.
Charlatan. No, I'm a chronic liar.
Yeah.
Just he doesn't, that the truth is irrelevant to this person.
Who
and
is
he's shown
incapable
it
of losing one.
Time and time and time again.
Yeah.
To then believe him that this time he's telling the truth. That's shocking to me that 50 million people would fall for that. I could see 35, 40 million people going, I don't believe a word the guy says on a personal level. I think he's full of shit. But the country was pretty good while he was president. I would think that would be people's position. But you're telling me 80%, 50 million people.
I'm just saying I don't know where these people are. Because I agree with you that there should be plenty who just are like, I voted for him because of the two, I thought he would be a better candidate for the job, but I fully accept that, like, we lost the election fair and square, and, you know, best of luck to the new guy.
If we have 50 million people who cannot tell that he is lying with everything that he says, with every utterance that he makes,
I would say
that
we have more
lie,
people in this country.
That's frightening.
Yeah.
That's really frightening.
Yeah, that's why this year is maybe more political than any other year, because time and time again, he gets up and says the craziest shit you can imagine about the pandemic, about whatever, about you know, racial injustice in America, about, like, you know, just like taking the side of Proud Boys over, like, the racial justice mm-hmm. movement, time and time again. And, like, people back him emphatically, enthusiastically. And then they also say, it's the same people that will say, look, I don't like the guy. Like, the guy's a buffoon, but like, I like his policies. But then, and I've got four friends that I can.
But if 50 million people are unable to detect when someone in that position is telling a lie, an overt lie that can just be, that can be shown within 10 minutes that he contradicted himself on X subject, a reporter can say, but you said this at
this
time.
They think the media is lying. That
speaks to such a deeper problem in our country with STEM, science, technology, yeah, engineering, mathematics,
yeah,
that people have lost the ability to reason.
Yeah.
Like, this person is telling, I'm wearing a green shirt. No, it's not. It's white. Well, sir, it's green. No, it's white. 50 million people.
Yeah, how many people believe in God in this country and are part of different religions? Like, it's not that crazy. Like, God is
more debatable than whether or not Donald Trump is a liar, though. Like, Donald Trump is lying. He lies every single time he speaks.
But Donald Trump's a real guy who exists, who you can see and hear, who gets up and says, anytime the media says I'm lying, they're lying. The media is a bunch of liars, and he's gotten enough people to believe him.
But that's a lie. Like,
of course.
Just
of course.
But the media probably lies sometimes, just like everyone lies sometimes.
Yeah.
But to say that they're always liars, that's just a lie. On its face value, how do people not know that that is a lie?
Apparently they don't.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But this is why I couldn't not vote.
Stand
on the side in this election, because I'm just kind of like, it is very scary. And all of the people that I've been able to meet and find who are the quote unquote reasonable Trump voters still think 100% that this thing was stolen, that this thing was rigged. And I'm like, how can you possibly think that when the dude said he was going to do this? He said he's doing exactly what he said he was going to do. He said, if I win, then good, I win. But if I lose, I'm going to sue everyone and use the Supreme Court.
If that is true, that's just really disappointing about our population.
Yes, it is.
I would never say I'm disappointed in someone because they voted for a specific person,
sure,
because of an ideological,
sure,
reason or a philosophical reason. But if you're not able to be able to determine whether someone is being just overtly untruthful or trying at least to deliver some form of the truth, if you can't tell the difference between those, we're in really big trouble.
Yeah, and the reason I mentioned the religion thing is just like, we live in a world where like most people, yeah, belong to some kind of organization, mm-hmm, that tells them all kinds of nonsense that they base their entire lives around. So I don't know, like, it is crazy. It's when you're not a part of an organization like that, when you're not a part of the cult, when you're not a part of Nexium, and you watch Keith Raniere speak,
everything they do seems crazy.
It's really clear that he's full of shit.
Yeah.
And it's insane that anyone could listen to him and not get that he's not saying any original ideas. He's just kind of regurgitating, like, you know.
Like you said in your episode, it really is stuff from like first year philosophy.
Yeah. It's just kind of like he's just sort of mixing and matching. These are not like profound breakthroughs that he's coming mm-hmm. up with. But like enough people are going along with smart people who otherwise it looks like they like intelligent,
yeah,
capable
effective.
People. And it's very effective. So there are these methods by which people get pulled in by men like Donald Trump. And it doesn't mean that they're unintelligent people. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that they're otherwise discompassionate people. So this thing that you're trying to say that you're like, oh, I bet a lot of them are like pretty reasonable people. I bet there are otherwise reasonable people who are believing very unreasonable things about him because they have been pulled
in. I just don't think that. I think even the people in Nexium who are capable, functioning, educated people, you're still, if you're able, we were raised in an organized religion that has cult-like tendencies.
Yeah.
And when you were raised in it and you can, and then you step away from it, you can see clearly, the mechanics of the machine. But I'm able to acknowledge within myself when I was in that experience, I was lacking. My faculties were lacking. I was lacking in reason. I was completely setting reason aside and just devaluing it. You cannot go through an experience like that and have reason and your emotions at the same level. If your emotion for Keith Raniere is totally being trumped by the reason.
I agree with you. In that instance, when you're part of that organization, but there are people who are part of that organized religion that we were raised in who, outside of matters dealing with that
church,
they're lacking
reasonable faculties with their religion.
In that instance. But they otherwise might be very, very intelligent, very capable people. They fully have reasonable capabilities when it comes to
make
like
money
there's a business.
Yeah, uh-huh,
running businesses. There might be lawyers and doctors who understand medicine, mm-hmm. who understand, you know, but when it comes to this one thing, they are incapable of reasoning. So there are probably millions of intelligent, compassionate, reasonable people who outside of their feelings for Donald Trump are capable of reasoning. But inside of that arena.
That's really disappointing.
Yeah.
And scary.
Yeah. And that's why more and more people are calling it a cult, because it's looking like a cult. Because when you look at it and go, this is so clearly not true.
But this one's a cult that potentially has military power behind it.
Yeah.
That's really, really
scary.
Luckily,
no longer in about 30 days.
Maybe.
So, you know.
Maybe.
Here's what I think about the whole military thing. So we're still in 2020. We still got a week to go. And the president, who is still the president, is talking about using martial law to overturn the rigged election, which is another crazy thing. It's just like one of a million crazy things that he's said throughout this election process. But what's heartening is he thought that his stolen Supreme Court majority would help him in the election. He thought that these three appointees that he appointed would come through for him.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't. They showed a lot of backbone and a lot of integrity and were like, yeah, we understand that you gave us the job that we have, but we have too much respect.
We don't answer to you. We answer to the country.
We have too much respect for this institution and for this
job.
We're
going to be here 30 years after you're gone.
Exactly. So this is a nonsense lawsuit, mm-hmm. and we will not hear it. And that was really cool. And I imagine that
the Supreme Court's rad.
Yeah,
what a cool thing.
I was actually so inspired by that decision. It was so cool to see them be like, no, we don't have loyalty to the president.
Yeah, we're not political.
If we are lucky, we're gonna be here through five or six presidents. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
So, I would imagine that any president that, especially when he's got 30 days left in office, goes to a major general or several generals in the military and says, "Hey guys, can we militarize the National Guard and get them in the streets and overturn this election?" They'd go, "Absolutely the fuck not. Get the hell out of my office."
Sure, like, hope so.
Absolutely not.
And that's what should happen, and hopefully it does.
Yeah.
And this is just a bookend that leads into a completely different era, and it just it's a strange bookend, but we return to some level of normalcy, a world that most people can recognize, whether they agree with it or not. It's familiar, and they know how to navigate in that space.
I think just having a president that acknowledges the death toll that's happened this year, just says it, and just talks about it compassionately and talks about it humanely hearing him say that this was before they had called the election. It was like Wednesday of election week, and I was here in town shooting a commercial, and I watched it with mom and dad and Anthony and Nicole. We watched him give a speech, and he talked about the families mm-hmm. of the, I think at that time it was like 260,000 families. And he talked about it, and I was like, we haven't heard the president
ever
say this. And just
this
having
has been going
that,
on for a year.
Yeah. And just having that base level of normalcy goes a long way.
That is the job of the president. The president doesn't have to be the greatest economist. The president doesn't have to be the top scientist, doesn't have to be the best physician, doesn't have to be a neuroscientist or a neurologist. The president is just a figurehead that's supposed to make people feel better so they can sleep at night.
Yeah.
That's ultimately his or her job. And if you can't do that, you're functioning as a terrible president.
Yeah.
The economy's strong? Great. That's not you. That's really smart economists. That's people who have PhDs from very, very prestigious universities who studied for 12 years to understand one subject.
Fluctuation that no one can really account for how it happens.
It's serendipity. There's a number of things. But you, as a president, your number one job is to stand before the American people and say, "Hey guys, I know we're going through some hard stuff, but we're gonna get there."
Yeah.
We're strong. We're resilient.
Yep. I mean, okay. So yeah, anyway, we didn't have answers or solutions for how we could have handled this year better, or, you know, what could have been done better in the election process to make people feel like it wasn't rigged. Like, and that's the thing, is we don't have solutions here on this podcast. We just talk about it. And there's a million more things we could have talked about, and a million crazier things that were said in tweets and news stories that occurred that flew under the radar, or that, you know, could have talked about the entertainment industry and just like the fact that like Broadway's gone and movies are gone, which is just crazy. It's like, are they going to have an Academy Awards this year? Why would they?
Are they ever going to come back?
Is that ever going to happen again? Or are we just going to deem, I mean, who knows? There's a million more things that we could always talk about 2020. I think we hit some of the big ones. Mm-hmm. Appreciate you being here, but I think we got to wrap it up.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks, all right, buddy.
Okay. Thanks. Okay, that's it. I'm done talking about 2020 for the time being. I hope you're all done. For just for a minute, we can put it away. We can definitely put it away for a minute. Here's just a quick rundown of things that we didn't get to cover in this episode, just so that if you're out there and you're like, I can't believe they didn't talk about this, just know that I'm aware of how massive this year was and that it was just impossible to cover everything. So here's just a quick rundown of some of the things that we didn't get to talk about. The bubble, the NBA bubble. Like, this was like the first way that sports were reintroduced to us after sports went away, which was like had never been heard of before. So like to have all of these top teams in the NBA go and like quarantine in this, they called it a bubble, but it was more of like a locked down area that they all stayed in basically through a whole like playoff period. It was really crazy, and it's unprecedented, and like definitely a story. Sports in general, just, you know, like baseball players playing to empty stadiums full of cardboard cutouts of people. It's just weird and eerie. So sports in general, schools. I did an episode on this podcast about schools and reentering and just like how insane that all was. That schools in many areas were kind of going, well, you know, if we're going to reopen schools safely, we need our numbers to be like under 500 daily cases. And then they were just opening anyway, even though cases were well over 1500 daily cases. Like the way that school boards across America just kind of kept moving their goalposts of what was acceptable to put our children and our teachers at danger. It was crazy, and it remains crazy. In fact, just recently, another crazy thing happened where a bunch of schools were shut down a day after people came back from winter vacation. So everyone was like, hold on, just so that we're clear, you had us all come back for one day so that we could all get together and spread whatever germs we picked up on our winter vacations, and then you're sending us all home to be in lockdown for a few weeks. Like, it's... And I get that people are doing their best and that we're kind of making things up as we go on a day-to-day basis, but it's really insane how disorganized just across the board, across the country, different school districts and school systems have been. I'm sure that there are some who have like really done it right, but for the most part, it just seems like a massive clusterfuck. So schools, arts and entertainment. We mentioned this a little bit at the end of the episode, but just like, you know, like what is New York City when Broadway isn't happening? And when was the last time that was a thing? Like the turn of the century? Like what of the 20th century? I mean, it's been a long time since Broadway hasn't been happening in New York, or theater hasn't been happening in the West End in London, or just movie theaters haven't been open in Los Angeles and New York. Movie theaters were open in certain places across the country and across the world, but like major cities had their movie theaters closed down. So no concerts, no movies, no plays. What that does to a society. We didn't get to talk a lot about that. Social class reckoning. There's always a social class reckoning going on. We talked about the racial dynamic reckoning in America and just sort of the Black Lives Matter movement. But there's always sort of this social classism conversation going on. It felt like in 2020, it was particularly highlighted by the way in which the ultra wealthy thrived in this year and everyone below the upper middle class really struggled. And it kind of really showed the way that the system is set up to take care of people who are already taken care of, and how poverty charges interest, that like being poor costs money. There aren't, we have this whole idea that having social programs that take care of people in our lower tax brackets would de-incentivize working hard and would, you know, would just create kind of a rash of dependency on the welfare state. But like, really, there's just people out here trying to pay bills. And we saw that come, you know, very strongly in 2020, almost to the point where like, it feels like if something's not done about it soon, that might be the thing more than anything else that might get us into a situation where there is like civil unrest and some kind of violent confrontation between classes. I think that social classism is probably something that we're going to need to talk about at some point and do a full-length episode on this show about. It definitely was a big storyline this year. The vaccine. We talked about COVID-19. We didn't really talk about the fact that, like, also in this year, we have a brand new, revolutionary, historic vaccine that's going to be, another massive moment, and also the politicization of this vaccine, just like the politicization of mask wearing and social distancing and everything else surrounding this pandemic, we are politicizing the cure for it, strangely enough, but also, of course we are, because that's the situation we're in. Zoom. How about the emergence of Zoom? God, do you think that the people who ran that company or who run that company had any idea what a huge year this was going to be for them? I mean, what made Zoom the go-to platform for the 2020 pandemic? That'll be something I'm sure that, you know, tech insiders will love to dig into as they examine this year. TikTok is another thing that kind of blew up. Another, like, the social media app that kind of, like, probably had the biggest year in 2020. I already did an episode about TikTok with Lennon Lazarson, who's coming tomorrow. Lennon Lazarson's coming back on my show to talk again about, we're going to be talking about going viral and kind of like, because since he came on my show, I think I gave you guys an update one time. I said, so when he came on my show, he had 600,000 followers on TikTok. After he did my show, I was like, hey, he broke a million. Dude's at 2.5 million followers right now. And also, not to brag, like, but your boy's doing okay as well. I had a big week last week and I gained 15,000 followers last week. So I'm not 2.5 mil like Lendon Laz, but your boy's doing better than he was. But TikTok had a big year. I think it's because a lot of people were just at home with nothing to do, and you put a lot of creative types at home with nothing to do, and they've got a phone in their hand that is a camera that has this social media app that is just designed for kind of short form content creation, and bada bing, bada boom, you've got this massive sensation of people creating like really intriguing and like unique and different kinds of content where people got really good at like telling 1 minute long stories and fitting a lot into a 60 second time frame. Anyway, there's it's fascinating to me. The Australian brush fires. Remember that big storyline where we were like, uh-oh, is Australia gonna go away? Is that gonna happen? That's another thing that just that was a huge story, and it sort of just kind of got sidelined. How about Beirut, guys? Remember Beirut? Was that not the craziest shit in the world? Did you watch that tape? That was insane. That was absolutely insane. And just the storyline around how that happened, that they allowed this freighter full of manure that's just like a bomb just waiting to go off to sit in that harbor for like 7 years, was it? It was something crazy like that. That was a crazy story. Man, 2020 just had so many of these crazy stories. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, historic, just historic figure in American politics and on the Supreme Court, and we lose Ruth Bader Ginsburg and have to go into giving Trump his third Supreme Court appointee. We did talk about how the Supreme Court swatted down his attempt to overthrow the election, which I thought was really cool. But man, like, that was another major storyline. Other big celebrity deaths, Chadwick Boseman, no one saw that coming. He didn't tell any of us. We were all bamboozled by that, you know? Dude was out here just giving Oscar-worthy performances in movies like Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, all while he knew that he probably had months left to live. Crazy. Go watch Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Chadwick Boseman is incredible, and he probably will win a posthumous Oscar for it. And he should. Heath Ledger style, you know? He's very, very good in that movie. This is a thing that I just learned about recently online, and I was like, that can't be real. And somehow it's real. And this did happen in 2020, so it qualifies as just a 2020 WTF story. But the KFC gaming console, like, everyone this year was talking about the PS5. Everyone wanted to get a PS5, but I don't think nearly enough people were talking about the fact that KFC, that as in Kentucky Fried Chicken, as in those awful commercials, I can't even tell you how much I hate the current marketing campaign for KFC. Whoever they have doing that voice, that like, oh hey, it's me, it's the Colonel, and they're finger licking good. Oh, it's the Colonel. A piping hot. I'm in a piping hot box. Whoever's doing that voice, I don't like you. And I want you to stop. I want you to get fired from your job. And I want whoever the ad executive was who came up with this whole line of commercials for KFC to be fired. But I don't want whoever came up with the idea for KFC to release a gaming console to be fired, because I want you to be promoted to the president of KFC, because that's prime thinking outside the box. I think that more fast food places need to just sort of, like, every once in a while do some bonkers shit like that. Like, Taco Bell every once in a while should just, like, produce a movie, you know? Like they have the ad campaign where they're like, it looks like a movie when they're advertising. But, like, what if Taco Bell legit was just like you're watching, you know, like a pretty, like, big budget movie. You're watching the next Avatar movie by James Cameron, and it says, like, you know, like Warner Brothers at the beginning, and in association with Lionsgate Entertainment, a Taco Bell production. Are you fucking kidding me? You wouldn't, like, instantly be like, what? Also, cool. Like, right on, Taco Bell. I think more places just need to sort of, like, every once in a while, just step way out of their lane just to shake it up. That was one of the weirdest stories of 2020, and 2020 was a weird-ass year, you guys. KFC made a gaming console. Who thought of that, and then who was like, yeah, we're doing it? That's a big one, you know? For me personally this year, I released my album, I was in a movie, I had a good year. I had a decent year. I got, like, low-key, very small, teeny tiny famous on TikTok. Not London Laz famous, but Austin Archer famous, which is, you know, like, famous for me. Not for him, but for me. Trump getting COVID. Remember when we all thought that he was gonna die for a second? And, like, people were like, hey guys, come on, let's show some class. Like, don't like, you shouldn't be cheering about anyone being sick. And that's true. That's absolutely true. But also, like, that was the funniest thing that that ever could have possibly happened. And, like, thank God it did. Especially now that he has not been reelected, and he will be a one-term president, or as I like to say, a one-pump Trump. That's what it is. A one-pump Trump. it's so funny to me that he got COVID, that he was like the cause of, I mean, it's not funny that this year was awful because he couldn't show better leadership, but it is funny to me that he got COVID. And then it is just so fitting that he acted like because he was okay, that was proof that like the 300,000 people who have died, I guess just like caught a worse strain or something than he did. And that it's really not that big of a deal. God, he's a bad person. And then the last one that I wrote down, there's probably more that I'm missing. I'm sure there's more. The last one I wrote down is that, remember when Kim Jong-un, when we thought he died? That's the last one I wrote down. So, yeah, I mean, my God. What do you think? What do you think about the conversation that my brother and I had? Who do you think's right in that conversation? Do you think Adam's right that like most Trump supporters are actually probably like reasonable people and that it's probably a small minority of them who really believe everything this guy says? Or do you think that it's actually alarmingly that the majority of them believe everything he says? I think it's the majority of them. My brother's a good guy and he wants to give people the benefit of the doubt all the time, and I love him for that. I really admire it and I want to be more like him. He and I think very much so alike in these terms, where we want to challenge our own ideas just as much as we challenge other people's ideas. We want to hold our own ideas under as much scrutiny as we would put other people's ideas under. We want to make sure that we're not just operating off of confirmation bias, and that we're giving people a fair shot to explain themselves when they have a position that seems out of whack or out of sorts to us. So I respect my brother for that position and for trying to be fair with people. But I think that removing himself from the political sphere a little bit might have resulted in him not fully being aware of just how insane and ridiculous this cult of Trumpism actually has gotten in America. Because he's also right that like it's an insane idea to think that 50 million or more people could actually agree that something's has gone awry in this election and that the election was stolen and could actually believe this madman when they listen to this tape that just came out of him threatening these Republican politicians from Georgia. I don't know if they're legislators or senators or what they are, but he's threatening these guys. He's saying mob king stuff like, oh, yeah, this is illegal. It could be very bad for you. You can't break the law like that. It could be very bad for you. That's very bad for you if you do that. He's saying stuff like that, like legit, word for word. He's threatening these guys over the phone. And it is crazy to think that there are tens of millions, 50 million, 60 million, maybe 70 million people in the United States who heard that audio and go, yeah, I agree with him. We need to find those 12,000 missing votes. It's alarming to think that, but I mean... it is a crazy idea, and yet, here we are. And yet, here we are. So yeah, I agree with him that like the idea that that many people would be taken in by this obvious con man is hard to believe. And yet, President Trump was a thing. So yeah, I don't know. Anyway, what do you think? How do you feel about our 2020 analysis? And which stories did we leave off that you would have liked to have heard? Let me know. DM me over at the People Pleaser Instagram account. I've got some really great guests coming up. Next week, I'm talking to Charla Bocchicchio, my friend that we had to do the makeup episode about her daughter. Very good episode. Very excited about that one. And it's also just, I think, important for people to hear. It's a good story, and she tells it well. After that, you'll hear from London Laz. And I've got some fun people that I've met on TikTok who are like doing really interesting things politically and just artistically that I'm going to be talking to this year. So yeah, stay tuned. 2021 is going to be, let's call it phase three. Phase two of People Pleaser was surviving 2020. Phase three is thriving in 2021. And I'm not saying anything like 2021's my year. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to jinx us, but I am saying that this show, I think we're going to take some steps forward. We as a group, we're going to take steps forward this year. That's not too much to ask, I don't think. Anyway, People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. The show is mixed and mastered by Chris Bjorn over at Marmalade Music. Go to marmalademusicslc.com. and tell Chris that you listen to People Pleaser, and he will give you 20% off your first audio project. That's it, you guys. That's it. I took a lot of your time in this outro because I wanted to get through all the stories that we didn't hit, but I love you. Thanks for sticking with me through 2020. Let's soldier forth into the new year. Take her easy. Bye-bye.